All right, you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal, Mr. Hunt?
5 minutes, Judge.
5 minutes? Okay, you may begin.
Okay. Thank you, and I'm George Hunt. I represent Brenda Fleischer. Your Honor, this is a simple restitution issue. Our argument in court, at the trial court level, was that the victim's request to have to be compensated for the locks on two vehicles goes over and beyond the actual damage that was caused by the defendant, Ms. Fleischer.
Let me ask you about that, if I may.
Yes, sir.
My understanding is that with regard to the Hyundai, the $358 amount, which includes replacing the keys and replacing the locks, is uncontested by your client. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. The $358 was for the key, and I think programming the key. And then
it was for the replacing the locks in the cylinder. I think it's on appendix page 86. The key in the cylinder and the estimated labor. Excuse me, 718.
Right, so what we were agreeing to was, I think the way that it came out on the record was that the labor was for the actual changing of the locks. It wasn't really quite clear from Ms. Leib's testimony.
Right.
And so I think what we agreed to, what we had stated in, was that she would agree to pay the $358.29.
The key in the cylinder. But
yes.
With the Toyota, the key in the cylinder also included replacing or reprogramming the computer. Is that right?
Yes.
So
yes,
how conceptually can you agree, okay, it's all right to have the key in the cylinder on one, but on a more expensive car, we can't have the key in the cylinder because it also includes a computer reprogramming.
Well, I don't think Ms. Fleischer was agreeing to the key and the cylinder on the Hyundai. She was agreeing to replacing the key.
If you look on page 86, the
right.
Estimate is key and CYLI, which I would assume would be cylinder.
And that's true, and I think I discussed that with Ms. Leib, exactly what that means, and I think it was relatively unclear at trial about what the CYLI was. So, I mean, we're trying to replace the key. That's what Ms. Fleischer is agreeing to. On both vehicles, we replace the key. I don't think there was any way to determine the difference between the cylinder and the key. So,
if we assume that one away for a second, and I'm not saying we're going to, but
right.
If we do, before the two keys are stolen, she has a car that, absent somebody being willing to break a window, is secured from the rest of the world.
Yes, sir.
All right. Once those two keys are stolen, if she does not have the locks changed, she doesn't, does she?
I suppose that's true. The keys are out there. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But
right, and in fact, we know that they or at least one time in the possession of somebody who's willing to use them to take one of the cars away.
Yes.
Then why isn't that a direct damage of the theft of the key? Because I had a working lock system that excluded the entire world except for authorized users. I no longer have that.
Well, because I think it's physical damage is what the statute's looking for. I mean, what the trial court essentially is doing is creating a loss based out of Ms. Leib's mental status. She's fearful of the...
But it's not, in this case, it's not mental. It's returning her to the state where she was, where she had a car that nobody but people she gave the key to could get into.
That's correct. I don't think that... I think we also have to look at the facts and determine whether or not it's possible that someone can even track us back to the Toyota. Let's just talk about the Toyota for an instant.
What if her house keys were stolen? Would she be entitled to have the house of new locks?
I think it needs to be reasonably related to the crime, and the crime is unauthorized use of the vehicle, and that, it is not unauthorized use of a house.
Okay, so you would say she would not be entitled to have the locks changed?
I don't think there's any nexus between a house and the crime that was committed by Ms. Fleischer. Yes, the spare keys to the Toyota was in the back of the car. There's no evidence that any other identifying information that would be able. So, first of all, this was in Franklin County. The car was driven to Roanoke. It's a different jurisdiction altogether. So, you know, we're assuming that whoever took the purse that had the spare keys to the Toyota and the $300 is going to somehow track the with a set of keys back to Franklin County to track down where this Toyota is. I mean, it's such a stretch.
If I've got the purse, I probably have a way of figuring that out, don't I?
Well, we don't know because Ms. Leib's never asked for to be compensated for any loss of identification, any loss of passports. We don't know what else is in the purse. All she said was there's $300 cash and a spare set of keys.
Well, tell me why this case isn't similar to our opinion in Salazar.
Judge, I'm not familiar with Salazar.
In Salazar, the award of restitution for a credit monitoring service was allowed after the victim's identifying information was stolen.
Okay, so the credit monitoring service says, so in case of there some charges on credit cards and whatnot. Well, I think that's different because if you have, in today's digital age, it's very easy to track down some, if you have someone's personal information, it's very easy to be able to, I think in the digital world we have today, to be able to use that information to the negative, to request credit cards in that person's name. Here we're talking about whether somebody in Roanoke is going to be able to take this Toyota key and presumably track it back to Franklin County at an address that they may not have any idea to even be able to identify the car.
Isn't that the address from where she took the vehicle?
No, it's not. Actually, the vehicle, the Miss Lipes drove to another man's house, and Miss Fleischer was already there. I do believe that the Toyota itself is, it's just not reasonably related to the crime that Miss Lipes committed. The Hyundai is much, it probably is relatively, I'm not conceding all the way, but it is probably related. You can get there because it was actually the vehicle that was taken by Miss Fleischer, driven to Roanoke and abandoned in Roanoke. So somebody presumably who came in and opened the door and took the key out may be able to identify the car, maybe took license plate information, may be able to track the car back to Franklin County and find the vehicle, get in the car, and drive away. However, I still think that our arguments and Howell and the arguments that followed up in Shelton, they all discuss, and Thompson, a direct a financial loss or damage, a direct. So, my argument is that this is not they're perfectly good working keys, and they're perfectly good working, well, the key's not, but they're perfectly good working locks. So the locks are something that is, we're going that one step further in Howell that they discuss.
Well, in Howell, it wasn't returning the person to the status quo, but it was introducing a new element of the security camera. Isn't that right?
It is, but...
Do you see a distinction there or not?
In this situation, I guess, again, what I'm looking at is we're returning... The trial court is supposedly returning Ms. Lipes back to her status quo, because she's fearful someone's going to steal the vehicle.
Her status quo is that she's the only person who has access to that vehicle because she has the keys, regardless of her state of mind. The physical status quo is that she's the only person with access to that locked car.
Right, and I guess you're saying there's something new by installing a security system altogether, so there's a difference. Well, I fall back on that we're still trying to figure out whether it's reasonable that someone could even track the Toyota. I think the Toyota is a stronger case on my argument. I just don't think it's reasonable that someone is going to find this Toyota and be able to break into it based off the one key that was taken out of a purse. Yes. Any questions?
Nothing further?
That's my argument.
You still have your rebuttal?
No, Judge. I'll wait.
Well, you may want to wait.
You may want to wait. Let's see what he's got to say first.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Liam Curry on behalf of the Commonwealth of Virginia in this matter. For restitution, it's obviously the standard of review is an abuse of discretion. And I would submit to the court that the trial court did not abuse its discretion when it ordered restitution payments in this matter, because even the challenge provisions were for losses or damage directly caused by Ms. Fleischer's criminal actions.
How does this case differ from Howell?
I think Howell is distinguishable for some of the differences that have already been discussed in argument. I think that Howell involved the restitution provisions that were challenged and overturned in Howell were for the purchase, installation, and I believe for several months of service charges for maintaining a security system. That security system for the victim's business was not in existence at the time of the burglary, so it wasn't a measure of restoring the victim to the pre-crime state. While it's not expressly stated by the Supreme Court in its decision as part of its rationale, I think a fair reading of Howe is that the Supreme Court viewed that restitution provision, I'm not sure if unjust enrichment is the proper term, but as perhaps enriching the victim in a way at the expense of the defendant.
Does it matter that the crime is not the stealing of the purse and any keys or the stealing of the car, but the actual crime of conviction is unauthorized use?
I do not believe it does in this case for a few reasons. One, I don't...
Why not, and focus on the Toyota?
Okay. I can do that, Your Honor. First, I don't believe there is... I didn't read the assignment of error specifically saying that the trial court awarded restitution for the grand larceny charge that was dropped by plea agreement. The second distinguishing characteristic I would refer to is that in the plea agreement, in which Ms. Fleischer pled no contest to the unauthorized use charge, she agreed to pay restitution. So the restitution, so Ms. Fleischer has already stated that the restitution is appropriate for that conviction.
And but then, could that just be for the gas and wear on the car while you were using it in an authorized fashion? That doesn't suggest to me necessarily you'll be buying a new lock system for a vehicle that wasn't involved in the crime at all.
I think that's an interesting argument that could have been raised. I believe that during the guilty plea hearing, defense counsel, when the issue of restitution came up, defense counsel specifically stated that they were in the process of trying to track down the keys. So I think the fact that the keys were missing was at least on the part in the, you know, that was within the what everyone was anticipating, the restitution provisions that would be associated with the terms of the suspended sentence in this case. And then the third way to address whether this restitution fit the actual crime is that Ms. Fleischer in the trial court conceded this is Appendix 71 through 72. Ms. Fleischer concedes that she was responsible for replacing the keys and the cash. Counsel goes on to state, I think we concede that the $988 is a direct action by Ms. Fleischer taking the car, and the purse later getting stolen is the fault of Ms. Fleischer. So I think the defense counsel and the defendant fully acknowledge, or they've removed that argument from consideration on appeal. And I would also note that argument seems to continue on appeal. It's on defendant's brief, page 11. I quote, it states, the direct loss Ms. Lipes, the victim, suffered due to appellant's actions was the loss of two sets of keys and the $300 in cash missing from her purse.
There was a significant period of time between when this offense occurred, June of 2017, and when the sentencing date took place. Isn't that right? I want to say maybe 14 months, is that? Between the date of the offense and the final sentencing order.
Let me see. It looks like the sentencing order was in January of this year.
Okay.
And
the offense occurred on June 20th of 17, so 6 months, I guess. And your colleague raises the point that the person would have to find the car find the Toyota, I guess, in another jurisdiction. Does it make any difference in the analysis at all that in the intervening 6 months the car was never taken?
I think that's something that the trial court could consider when determining whether it was reasonable to award restitution for the replacement locks, but I don't think the period that is actually proven in the record makes it so that it would be inherently unreasonable and abusive discretion to award restitution for the replacement locks.
There's a statement in Howell that seems to me to be somewhat similar to the situation we have here, and it's where the Supreme Court is quoting the Kansas Court of Appeals, saying that the purchase of the security system was prompted by concern that defendant, a neighbor of the victim, would reoffend, but this purchase was an example of tangential cost incurred as a result of the crime, not a cost caused by the crime. And isn't that exactly what we have here? We have a fear of reoffending, of a future offense, used as the basis for the restitution rather than an actual cost caused by the crime. The crime didn't in any way affect the locks and the cars.
I think I would disagree with that premise, Judge Petty. I believe that by the defendant's actions misappropriating the victim's property, these locks no longer function as intended.
Why do you say that? Were there other keys?
Well, I think for the reasons that by losing the keys, and there's no evidence that they've been destroyed, there's no evidence that they are in a place where they could not be recovered, that the victim's ability to prevent unwanted intrusion into that automobile has been compromised.
But that, again, that's a fear of future offense. That's the same fear that drove the victims and Hal to install the security system. If the keys, the stolen keys, were replaced, the victim would be made whole.
In this matter?
In this case, yeah. In terms of loss, actual loss.
I think I would just again disagree, Judge Petty, that there is no other loss here. I think the loss in this manner is that the defendant purchased or is in possession lawfully. Let me back up. The victim in this matter was lawfully in possession of her own motor vehicle. Part of that motor vehicle was its security protections. Those security protections have been compromised. The keys are out there somewhere. And I don't think it's unfair to hold it upon this defendant who misappropriated that vehicle. And I think because of the nature of an automobile, all of the property inside, it's incumbent upon her to make the victim whole by returning those keys. And without those keys, the security protections for that motor vehicle that were there on the day before this crime took place are no longer there. It is much more of a tangible loss than in Howe. Howe is involves, I guess you would argue, an intangible loss. Not only because there was no evidence that any sort of security in Howe was compromised.
If they had drilled out the lock in Howe, nothing about the Howe decision would prevent you from requiring them to pay restitution to allow you to put a new lock in.
That's correct. And I was actually
already an existing lock.
And I was rereading Howe in the gallery earlier, and if the panel has it before them, it looks like, see if I can find the page. It's on, let's see, 739, the end of the paragraph that begins at trial, Hal pled guilty. It says, as conditions of a suspended sentence, the trial court imposed 5 years of probation and restitution of $1,399. Of this amount, $1,040 was for the installation of a new security system. I think based on the evidence that was before the court and how the break-in was done through breaking of a window. So I think the restitution provisions that were upheld, presumably, were repairing the window, presumably, which was a locked window, why it was destroyed, was the restoring of the criminal protection, or the protection, security protections of that business and how. And that's all that the Commonwealth is asking for here, is that the vehicle had security protections, the vehicle's security protections were compromised by the direct act of Ms. Fleischer, and that it was reasonable for the trial court to restore, as is the legislative, or one of at least the legislative purposes of restitution provision, is to make the victim whole, to restore her, not to enrich her, not to go beyond restoring, but just to simply bring her back to where she was before she was the victim of a criminal act. The panel has no further questions. I would cede the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Ask you to affirm.
Don, you've got, want to use any of your rebuttal now?
No, Honor. I mean, I think we all know what the issues in the court are, unless there's any additional questions from the panel.
Well, we thank you for your brevity.
Okay, thank you.
We will greet counsel, and then we will stand adjourned for the day.
Oh, they're right. They're getting excited about press.